Greetings and salutations, creature lovers. This is Mr. Venom welcoming you to No More Room in the Hell presents Creature Comforts. Before we start talking about our movie, let me go ahead and introduce my cohorts. First, it is Mr. Don Anelli coming to us from the Horror Countdown podcast. How you doing, Don?
Yeah, what's going on? Always happy to be here.
Killer. And of course, joining us as always is Mr. Derek B coming to us from the main show, No More Room in Hell. How the hell are you doing, Derek?
You know, it's been a long time coming, Venom. I picked the wrong episode to quit smoking on.
I did see that you quit smoking. Good luck to you, brother. I quit over a decade ago, so I know what you're about to go through. So good luck. Well, this month we are, before we actually get into this month's movie, I want to go ahead and take this opportunity to announce next month's episode. It is so rare that we here at Creature Comforts know what the next episode is going to be that we almost never announce it. But in this particular instance, since we already know definitively what movie we're going to be doing, I'm going to go ahead and announce it now. So we're going to have a quick turnaround this time around. We're going to have our next episode out hopefully in 3 weeks. And that is so that we can go ahead and give you a very fresh review of Godzilla versus Kong 2, The New Empire. Of course, for those who don't know, it opens in American cinemas on March 29th. Then we're going to get together, watch it that first weekend, and try to get an episode out as quick as we possibly can. So I wanted to get those Godzilla juices flowing since it's been a whole month since we've gotten a chance to talk about Godzilla. So
I was going to say, we didn't get a chance to celebrate his Oscar triumph. So
exactly. Yeah, it only took 70 years and Big G finally gets his Oscar. I mean, if the special effects Oscar it existed back in the 50s and 60s, I'm convinced that, especially the original Godzilla, I'm convinced that that probably would have won that. But unfortunately, since that Oscar wasn't created until, if I remember correctly, sometime in the 80s, it finally took this long for Godzilla to win that Oscar.
I thought it was either American Werewolf or Thing.
Yeah, which would be early 80s. So
yeah, so I'm saying is that I thought it was either 81. American Werewolf or, yeah, it was either American Werewolf or it was the Thing.
So, again, congrats, Godzilla. Congrats on the Godzilla Minus One team wearing their very spiffy matching Godzilla high heels. If you guys did not see the awesome shoes that the Godzilla Minus One team was wearing, look those pictures up. Google that shit right now. Those shoes were goddamn spectacular. So, yeah,
they again, got their congrats Oscar, to the Godzilla Mr. Freeze team. And the Penguin.
That's right. At least it wasn't naked John Cena giving them their Oscar, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
All right. So, like I said, I wanted to make sure that you guys were aware of next month's episode. When we first started this show, I know we had said that we were going to avoid kaiju movies, and obviously that was because the three of us were on a different podcast that was kaiju specific, and there was always rumors of that show maybe returning. So we had this kind of steadfast rule on the show of no kaiju, just in case that other show came back. But now, you know, it's been a couple of years. It's literally been more than a year since I've even spoke to the fourth host from that show. So it's pretty safe to say that one probably won't be coming back. So the kaiju embargo is over. We are absolutely going to jump on as much kaiju as we can, especially when new kaiju films are released in American cinemas. We will be sure to jump on those right away and get our thoughts out on those, as, you know, it's going to be important to a lot of our listeners. Ultimately, anybody listening to this show, I would imagine, is going to go see Godzilla versus Kong regardless of what we say about it. But on the off chance if there's anybody on the fence, we'll try to get that episode out as quickly as possible. So,
like in the future, maybe even redo some of those old movies too, because, you know, we didn't really get really too much into them on that show.
Yeah, since we were doing a movie and an episode of Ultraman, sometimes we didn't get to concentrate on the movie maybe as much as we'd like. So, yeah, definitely I am not against redoing, especially because we already did my favorite Godzilla movie of all time on that show, and I definitely wouldn't mind revisiting that on this show, especially after the release of Minus One, which kind of jumbled up a lot of our top five, top 10 Godzilla movies lists. So it'll always be fun to revisit those. So, yeah, definitely not against that. But with that being said, let's go ahead and get on to this month's festivities. So as most of you know by now, this month we are looking at 1995's Species.
In January, a message from an extraterrestrial source was picked up at the Parkes Observatory in Australia. A new sequence of DNA, friendly instructions on how to combine it with ours.
Growth is in me.
The decision was made to terminate the experiment.
Breaking out!
She escaped. We have a serious emergency on our hands.
I want a team to track her.
Hunt her down.
You created a monster, now you want us to kill it.
We decided to make it female so that it would be more docile and controllable.
More docile and controllable, huh?
I guess you guys don't get out much.
She wants to have a baby.
She'll kill anyone that gets in her way.
I wouldn't hurt you.
Yes, you would. Just don't know it yet.
She'd have a dozen babies. She could lay 1,000 eggs.
Something's wrong.
She's here!
Yeah! Open the damn door!
Hey!
Ah!
Oh, God.
This is directed by Roger Donaldson, written by Dennis Feldman, with a very eclectic cast. Admittedly, some of these actors weren't A-list at the time. Specifically, people like maybe Alfred Molina and Forrest Whitaker weren't quite at the height of their stardom. It's definitely Alfred Molina, since most of us didn't even know who the hell he was until a certain Spider-Man movie came out. But yeah, I mean, this cast, yeah. Obviously, you know, the beautiful Natasha Henstridge as our main character. We've got Michael Madsen, Ben Kingsley, Forrest Whitaker. We've got Marge Helgenberger, a very young Michelle
Williams.
CSI,
yeah.
Like a teenage, a teenage Michelle Williams. I mean, this is, you know, on paper, this is a great cast.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we have Ben Kingsley, a current Oscar winner, that even, you know, when he did this movie, he was already an Oscar winner for Gandhi. You know, we've got some acting pedigree in this movie. Does that acting pedigree help out the film? Well, we'll have to find out right now. As I mentioned, our movie's from 1995. It is a runtime of 1 hour and 48 minutes, and our synopsis is as follows. A group of scientists try to track down and trap a killer alien seductress before she successfully mates with a human. Now, obviously, this movie is, you know, almost 30 years old now, 29 years old as we look at it. So, obviously, this will be a very spoiler-filled review. And since the movie's been out a long time, I'm sure we'll have a lot of opinions on it. I especially am going to have some very, let's just say, loud opinions about this movie. But for now, let me defer to the host who picked this movie. That is, of course, Mr. Derek B. So, Derek, why don't you come on in here and tell me a little bit about your general thoughts on Species.
Okay, I'm going to go right into it real quick. I know this isn't a fucking good movie. I'm going to say right out of the mouth. You know, I know it's not a good movie at all. You know, but there's some charm to it in some aspects. Like, I love it. Like, when the special effects do happen in the movie, they're pretty awesome. Steve Johnson, you know, can't knock the movie on that stuff. And, you know, the one thing that I do appreciate about this movie a lot is the score by Christopher Young. That's probably a big highlight that makes the movie move a little bit more. You know what I mean? Because there is a lot of, like, downtime to this movie, too. We're just fucking Forrest Whitaker's eye looking at Michael Madsen.
You know, while his other eyes looking at Ben Kingsley.
You know, Ben Kingsley's just there being like the stupidest scientist ever. I'm like, yeah, I decided to cross alien DNA. You know, yeah, that's a great idea. You know, weirdly enough, this movie is not even the most horniest of this franchise. Weird, because part two is way hornier, and it's from a different director, too. It's from, the guy who did The Changeling did part two. Weird.
Wow.
Weird. Can't wait to watch that one. Peter Boyle, crazy. I actually kind of prefer part two to part one. It's a little weirder and goes into that weirdness that I think this movie, if it did kind of go into that weird, a little bit more weird, it'd be like a more of a classic in that sense. And you know, the design of the creature itself, you know, H.R. Giger did it. So it kind of has like that weird sexualized feeling of like Alien, but there's not a lot of it in it to really comprehend that. You know, I just thought, cheesy fucking, we always do fucking good movies and shit. It's good to fucking do a shitty fucking B movie once in a while. You know, it's kind of fun seeing like all these actors in this fucking weird B movie. Even though I did, like, this is like before Forrest Whitaker won an Oscar too, so he's like acting, he's kind of the only one acting his ass off in this movie when everyone else is just staring blankly. You know, him and Alfred Molina are actually having, looks like, fun with their performances while there's like, I'm here for a paycheck.
Yeah.
Some fun, and I'll bring up some things about that I do like about the character of Syl, because she's kind of one of the smartest characters in this movie. Yeah, it's the one I don't go back to that often, but, you know, kind of has like that nostalgic feel. Like, I remember watching this movie and the, oh yeah, Ben Kingsley's deaf. I wish I saw that on screen. You know, I have little nitpicks of it all over the place. It's stupid. You know, it's just a stupid movie that, you know, it's kind of weird with the, like, the cast in it now. It's like, oh, that was a weird time capsule. You know, there's a lot of movies that came after this one that I kind of like better, even some like cheesy like sci-fi channel ones that kind of copy this, like Decoys, which had kind of the same premise, but it was a little bit more fun and cheesy. But, yeah. I wish it was a little bit more weird in that sense, too.
All right. Don, why don't you come on in here and give us some general thoughts on Species?
Yeah, I like this one. I agree. I do think that there are some issues here, but I enjoyed it. It's been a while since I saw it. The last time I remember revisiting it was the early 2010s. I had vague memories of it, but yeah, it was fun to go back and revisit this. I do agree. I think that there are a lot of rather weird characters in here. A lot of the researchers are kind of oddly written. They're supposedly these, you know, state-of-the-art, top-of-their-game hunters that, you know, they do this for a living, and yet they fall victim to every single trap, every single, you know, situation that they're trained not to. And then, they wonder why they have a, you know, hard time tracking her. So, you know, that's, you know, part of the equation. And then there's, you know, other spoiler things we'll, you know, probably talk about later, but I do like it. I do think that there are some, you know, fun things here with Syl. I do like the way that she's, you know, portrayed as naive, and then that kind of allows the, you know, her victims to take advantage of her and then, you know, fall into her trap, which, you know, kind of helps the movie along. I like the creature effects. I wish there was a little bit more gore. I think they could have pushed the envelope a little bit more, but I think that they were kind of, you know, I do think that they were kind of, you know, maybe skittered away from it because of the, you know, heavy nudity in the film. So you didn't want to, you know, include too much of it to kind of, you know, push it further one way or the other. Ironically, I'd see this, you know, maybe this could have, you know, been like a potential like remake making, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, but yeah, you know, I don't know if it would fly today, you know, with all the, you know, I think times have changed, and I think this is kind of a product of its time. But I really wish that this probably could have, you know, been updated and, you know, put a little bit more thought into it, maybe fix some of the characters, maybe fix some of the, you know, just weird situations that go on. You know, go full bore with the nudity, go full bore with the gore, and, you know, play with that a little bit and, you know, make it either like a super, super serious thing where you could have I really don't want to spoil this because there is, I think there is a hint of an idea here with Syl as this sort of, I don't know if I'm using the proper term, but like the stand-in for like this viral threat. And I think there's a hint of an idea that you could play with here that I would love to see toyed with again. But I don't know if, you know, now would be at the proper time just with all the, you know, thing, you know, the tone and attitude in Hollywood where I don't know if that would, you know, play well. But in either extent, I do think that there are some charms here. I mean, you know, my red-blooded maleness is never going to say no to, you know, Natasha Henstridge trying to seduce others. So those are always fun times. The creature looks good. The gore is fine. Wish it could have gone more. But yeah, I do agree that there are some, you know, some issues here. And it does have some, you know, problems from its time period. But overall, not a bad watch. I enjoyed it. Not my go-to, not a, you know, top 10. But yeah, I guess it was a worthwhile watch and, you know, fun enough time if you're in the mood for it.
I'm going to come in here, and it looks like it's my turn to make some enemies and be the voice of dissent. Because, my friends, I do not like this movie. I want to like it so bad. And my laundry list of reasons why I don't like this movie is, well, it's exactly that. It's a laundry list. It's a long list. I'm going to go over a couple now during general thoughts, but then as we kind of go through the episode, I'll talk about some of the individual scenes that really bothered me, but man, this movie is incredibly inconsistent. This movie doesn't know what it wants to be. This movie doesn't know if it wants to be a 90s erotic thriller, a sci-fi movie, a creature feature, a horror film, a police procedural. I mean, this movie dips its pen in so many different inkwells that it can't make a clear picture. Like, I don't know what this movie is. If I had to classify this movie, I don't know where I would put it. It's not really horror. It's sci-fi, yeah, but it's really just kind of a sprinkle of sci-fi. There's fantasy elements. There's horror elements. There's so much going on. And that's not always a bad thing. When movies kind of dip their pens in different subgenres as they're making their films, sometimes it's pretty cool. But in this particular case, the movie just feels disjointed to me, like it doesn't really know what it wants to be. Next, the nudity. I again, like I said, I'm going to be the voice of dissent here because I am also a red-blooded, grown-ass American male. And I know that in my pocket, there is a cell phone where I can access millions of hours of free porn if I want. I don't need to see the porn in my goddamn horror movies. I feel like if they would have taken all of the shots where Natasha Henstridge appears naked and then all the shots where she appears in her true form as Syl and swapped them out, so that we got less nudity and more Syl, I think I would have liked this movie a little bit more. I'm not saying I dislike the nudity, mind you. I'll look at Natasha Henstridge naked all day. That's fine. What I'm saying is it doesn't enhance my movie. It doesn't add anything to it. And what's funny, too, is we actually didn't talk about why we picked this movie. Obviously, this is March. We are in March, and it is Women in Horror Month. And we wanted to do a female-centric creature feature. So, you know, we came up with a short list, you know, stuff like the Wasp Woman and the Leech Woman, She-Beast, Species, things like that. We ended up going with Species on Derek's suggestion.
Never listen to Derek.
This movie is the least female-centric movie. Like, there's nothing empowering about this woman in this movie. She is a monster who just wants to fuck and kill, and that's it. If she can't fuck you, then she will kill you. It is that simple. I don't see what's empowering about that. I don't think that was the intention of this movie either, to be a rah-rah, we are woman, hear us roar type film. I don't think that was the intention of this film, because it was written and directed by two different men. So, yeah, so kind of a weird choice for Women in Horror Month. Like I said, not the most empowering female creature that we could have picked. But like I said, just, you know, the fact that this movie is basically a Cinemax After Dark movie with like a little bit of sci-fi thrown in, It just doesn't work for me. That's all. Now, there are elements of this movie that I like. I love Forrest Whitaker and Alfred Molina in this movie. They look, just like Derek said, they look like they're having fun, like they actually want to be there. I'm not going to fault Natasha Henstridge's performance because ultimately this is her first film and she's playing an uncaring, unfeeling monster. So she's supposed to be wooden. So her performance is fine. You know, I'm not going to say anything about her performance being bad because she did what she was supposed to do. Now, some of the other people in this movie, like the aforementioned Ben Kingsley, at no point in this movie does it seem like he wants to be there. You know, every line is delivered very monotonally, and he is playing a scientist, so maybe that kind of goes in with the character, that he is just a monotone type of character. But, I mean, we're talking about Ben Kingsley, a fucking Oscar winner. Why did he need to play this role? Yeah. Like, this is very obviously a paycheck movie. I mean, no one is going to change my mind on that. You know? This is not a prestige piece.
Yeah.
And but then that's what I mean. Why spend the money on Ben Kingsley when you could have hired a no-name actor and put the money that you would have paid Ben Kingsley into the effects? Because I do agree with Don that the practical effects in this movie are great. I love H.R. Giger's designs. I love his artwork in general. That psychosexual, sci-fi, you know, crazy, lots of sharp edges and metal and leather. His art has always done it for me. Alien, one of my favorite movies of all time, in my top 10 horror of all time. So I obviously love Giger and I love his designs. God damn the CGI in this movie. Like, yeah. I remember the CGI being bad in 95. Like, the whole final scene is ruined by bad CGI. Like, what could have been a really fun, over-the-top, high-adrenaline, you know, battle, final confrontation, and it just turns into a CG nightmare. And, man, that's what the movie leaves you with, too. And it's too bad. Because, like I said, I like her practical design. Problem is, we don't see her practically in the film for more than a few flashes here and there. You know, we might see her jump out of water, but we don't see her land. We might see her in one of those, like, weird psychosexual dream sequences that we see throughout the film where Syl is having sex with another of her species. You know, those scenes are all really cool. If you have epilepsy, don't watch the movie. Lots of flashing strobe lights during the dream sequences, and then the scene in the club too, more strobe lights and flashing. So yeah, there definitely needs to be an epilepsy warning at the beginning of this movie. Back to the inconsistency of this story. Forrest Whitaker plays an empath, an empathetic character, someone who can sense other people's emotions, most recently like Mantis from the Guardians of the Galaxy's movies, for all the Marvel fans out there. All throughout the film. Yeah, exactly. All through the film, Forrest Whitaker's character talks about how he knows that Syl is in the area or that she was just here. Like, he can sense her. Why the fuck couldn't he sense when Ben Kingsley was under mind control? It doesn't make any fucking sense. He's an empath. He should have known that Ben Kingsley was working, that he was going against his own motivations and everything else. Like, even the people in the group that didn't have the ability, they all said the same thing. Like, what is going on? This doesn't feel right. And then the empath doesn't say anything. Like, that's a major hole in this story for me. Go ahead, Dunn.
I was going to say, maybe it's more physical presence, not her using her powers. Because it feels more...
I was thinking,
but he's an empath, though. That's the difference, though. You got to realize he's not a psychic. He's an empath.
That's what I'm saying.
Empaths deal with emotions. A psychic, maybe that I could potentially see, but the fact that Ben Kingsley wasn't himself, he should have been able to feel that. He should have been able to feel that the orders that Ben Kingsley's character were giving weren't coming from him. They were coming from someone else. So, yeah, that's, you know, it's a gripe, it's a minor one, but it's still, you know, it just kind of goes towards the inconsistency of the film. The fact that they're breaking their rules, it seems like they set rules in the universe and then they kind of break them.
Yeah, I was going to say, the way that I would have written that, like, if they still did it, to make it explain a little bit more, is maybe, like, because it wasn't her human side anymore when she changed, you know what I mean? And that's why I would have said, this is all coming from my head, though. You know, this is what my own fan fiction for that. So to make it a little bit make more sense for myself. But other than that, I get what you're saying. It doesn't, the movie doesn't explain that to you the way I would explain it to myself. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Another issue I have with the movie is the runtime. It's a little bit too long for my opinion. And I know exactly.
Yeah.
I know exactly the 10 minutes that you can cut out of this movie. Cut out the entire scene with Syl kidnapping that woman, stealing her car, faking her death. Cause it's so fucking stupid that Syl would think that would even work. You've got a group of five hardcore professionals that literally their job is to find people, and you think that faking your death in a stupid car accident is going to, like, deter them, make them, oh, well, she's dead, you know? Nobody in the group thought she was dead. Everybody was like, this doesn't feel right. It doesn't, you know, blah, blah, blah.
You know, it's fucked up, but the people that hired them did. That's the only problem, Venom.
Valid. Like, no, very valid. Very valid.
Yeah, Vic Kingsley was like, yep, it's time to go home. It's done.
Yeah, that's what I just, again, like I said, this is what I mean about the inconsistencies of the film. There's so many. I mean, let's talk about the design a little bit more. And we've all kind of said some positive things about the design and what we like about it. Boobies. Derek, come on in here and talk a little bit more about the design on Syl.
Tentacle boobies.
Yeah.
They even get better in the sequel.
Oh, man. I will admit, I did like the tentacle, the titty tentacles, as I call them in my notes. Titty tentacles. I thought that was kind of an interesting concept.
Yeah, it's like she's an alien, like so Hellraiser. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I can accept it, you know. Even though this, again, see, this is where the movie handles its siege well, because there's a lot of scenes where Syl is in her, you know, is CG, but they use the darkness to kind of cover some of the imperfections of the CG. We've talked about this before, where filmmakers will do that. They'll recognize the limitations of their CGI, and they'll, you know, mask it with some of the darkness. They do that really well throughout the film. But then that final scene. Oh, God, I'm terrified to watch this movie in 4K, because 4K really brings out the limitations in CGI. Like, CGI, bad CGI looks even worse in 4K, at least to me.
The tongue kill was awesome.
Oh, the tongue kill. Yeah, I mean, there's only one, ultimately, I only really like one kill in this movie, and that's the spine rip. But even the spine rip doesn't make sense, because, and here's just me nitpicking consistency again. In the scene, in the club, in the bathroom, right before the spine rip, we see Natasha, we see Syl in the bathroom, in the same bathroom that the woman is in. And then seconds later, Syl's alien hand comes crashing through the wall. It doesn't come crashing through the side like she's in an opposite stall. It comes through the wall behind the woman, which means that Syl had to have walked around, gone into the men's room, got into a stall, changed into her alien form, and then ripped through the wall to grab this, to rip this woman's spine out of her back, to then return to human form and nonchalantly walk out of the men's room. Again, it's something that you would really think about if you're just watching a popcorn film and, you know, you're getting into it. But obviously, when I start to lose interest in the film, I'm going to get nitpicky. And that's one of the things that bothered me. Why wouldn't she just go to the stall next to the woman and go through the thin barrier between the two stalls? Why make it more difficult go around to the other side? Which, by the way, we don't see. It's not like we see this in the movie. It's just, it has to be that way, because there's no way she's crashing through the wall if she's in the same room, in the same bathroom with that woman, with her victim. So even though it's a great looking kill, it's my favorite kill in the movie, it doesn't make sense that she went to all that goddamn trouble to go around to the other side to do it. Again, nitpicking. But when I don't enjoy a movie, nitpicking comes really easy to me.
Yeah, the dead body effect of the Tobo was fucking hilarious. He was like a fucking president.
Oh, Oh, yeah, the boxcar hobo, yeah. That was an interesting one, because Syl obviously doesn't understand how strong she is at that point. So when she throws the guy against the wall, you can see the look on her face. She was even surprised. She was like, holy shit, I can do that? What the hell? So that was pretty interesting, because she never like, breaks anyone in half again. The spine rip is probably the worst.
She just eats bananas whole. She eats bananas whole and shit.
Oh god. I almost hurled. I'm like, I know you're an alien. I know you don't know what you're eating, but oh, that's gotta be gross. The banana through the peel. Oh man. But I mean, great work by Michelle Williams, even though Michelle Williams only plays teenage Syl for like what, the first 15 minutes maybe of the movie. But I still think she did a great job, you know, a very young Michelle Williams, doesn't really have a lot of dialogue, you know, a couple of words here and there, if even, you know, she definitely conveys confusion really well. Like the scene on the train where she starts to, where she starts to molt basically, where she starts to create her cocoon.
Yeah.
Like the look of fear and just dread in her face is very realistic. It's very organic. You
good
know?
Eye performance too.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not a big Michelle Williams fan either, and this is coming from a guy who's got multiple Venom tattoos on him, and she's in the Venom movies, but I'm not that big a fan of hers. But I liked her in this. Maybe it's because she didn't speak. I don't know. It's kind of like Nick Cage in Willy's Wonderland. It's one of my favorite performances, probably because he doesn't speak. I'm looking through my notes. I'm still... Michael Madsen is upsettingly charming. Is what I put in my notes. He's such a fucking douchebag, but he can still get any woman he wants. It's so goddamn upsetting to us normal looking guys.
I'm going from Betty Crocker over there. Hey.
I mean, he literally goes from girl to girl, and then I guarantee if Syl would have maybe caught him a little bit earlier before getting in the elevator, I'm convinced he would have said, fuck the blonde, and gone with Syl. Who was a brunette at this point, by the way, if you haven't seen the film, which looked awful for her, by the way. Why didn't she go red? Brunette was just not the hair color for her at all. I think blonde is the hair color.
Wasn't she actually red in Maximum Risk? I think she was red in that movie. Don, did you
see that? I think she was one of the sisters. I don't know if that was the main one, but I think.
Oh,
one
yeah,
of the
I forgot she played twins in that. Yeah, I forget.
Yeah, I think one of the twins was red, was a redhead.
I don't know if she would look better with red hair. I'm just saying I hated the brunette. I just, the
she
color choice
blonde
really
in part two. Was,
thank God.
Because she's not even Syl anymore, though. She's Eve in that one. She's a clone.
Yeah, see, I've never gone past this first movie in the franchise. Never seen any of the sequels. I've heard a lot about the second one, you know, kind of like the stuff
very
that
horny.
You were saying. That it's, yeah, that it's even more horny, more nudity, blah, blah, blah.
And James Cromwell.
Serious question for you guys, and please don't worry about sounding misogynistic or anything like that. I want honest opinions. Do you think that this being Natasha Henstridge's first movie and the fact that she's naked in it so much, do you guys think that was a detriment to her career? Because even though she's never stopped working, she's always been working, but she's never reached the levels that I thought that she would, that I and many, many people thought that she would, that, you know, she would be eventually a Scarlett Johansson or an Elizabeth Olsen or somebody like that. I'm wondering, and especially in the mid-90s where most movies were incredibly misogynistic, you know, they had the male gaze displayed all through them. I don't know. As I'm looking at her filmography, I'm like, you've literally never risen to the heights of your very first movie. Do you guys think that she's naked so much in this movie and she's so comfortable with her nudity that it's almost like she's a former porn star. You know how when a porn star goes to do normal films, non-porn films, she's still very comfortable being naked in front of the camera, kind of like Marilyn Chambers in Rabid.
Yeah.
If you guys remember the original Rabid. I don't know, because as I'm looking at her filmography last night, I'm like, does anybody offer this girl any good movies at all? I'm not saying that all her movies are crap, not at all. I'm just saying that none of them, you know, she's never been in like a Jurassic Park or a Marvel movie or something along those lines. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Like, honestly, do you guys think that too much nudity in your first movie maybe messed up her career? Because I think it did. What do you think?
Mm.
I don't know. She did three Species movies, too. That's the thing.
Yeah, and she never did a Spielberg movie, and that's what I'm talking about, is that she never... women who look this good in popular horror movies, they tend to get, you know, more roles later on. You know, Jamie Lee Curtis went on to do more regular cinema, not just horror, you know, stuff like that. So it's like, she never really made that transition from B-star to A-star. And like I said, I'm just wondering if it's just because everyone knows what she looks like naked. Like, there's no mystery. You know what I mean? Like, when we watch, I don't know, when we watch something like Wolf of Wall Street, we don't all know what Margot Robbie looks like naked. So there's still that allure when there's sex scenes. It's like, ooh, we might see her naked. With Natasha Henstridge, it's like, well, we already saw her naked. I don't know. I know I'm being misogynistic, and I apologize for this, but I'm also trying to be honest because I live in L.A. I know what the Hollywood system is like. I was here during the Harvey Weinstein years where it was just misogyny city. But it's just so weird that, like, this girl, like Natasha Henstridge basically had the same career as who was the girl from Showgirls? I forgot her name.
Elizabeth Berkley.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like after Showgirls, she never really reached any higher heights. You know, kind of. I'm not saying that it's necessarily the nudity, because Showgirls is just not a very good movie. But I know some people like it, and that's fine. I don't know. It's just as I'm watching this, I'm like, man, did she do herself a detriment by being so naked in this movie? I mean, guys, there's no less than six scenes of her naked in this movie, butt ass naked. And again, you know, as Don said, we're all red-blooded American males. None of us are really going to complain about that, but like I said, it doesn't enhance a movie for me. For me personally, the amount of boobs in the movie, the amount of bare ass in the movie does not hinder or help the movie in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it's just the era of this one, time, I actually, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I just feel like this one was a little bit of a mistake. She was nude too much. You almost get desensitized to it, too. Because by the time she's having sex with Alfred Molina's character, we've already seen her naked five times. It's like there's no real excitement left. I don't know. Again, I'm just, you know, I'm speaking
personal opinion. She's not really that naked in part two.
Oh, good.
There's more man-ass in that movie than anything.
God, depending on the man-ass. Like Michael Madsen, I didn't need to see that. That was
no, you know, he's not man-ass in that one. He just chills with Bubba Gump.
I mean, the major thing that I leave, that the movie left me with, is that it's really less a creature feature and more a police procedural based around a horny alien.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Again, you know, I'm not going to call it a bad movie because that's not my place. I'm just going to say I don't enjoy it. I have watched it twice in my life. I don't think I'll ever return to it unless I have to for a podcast, which is fine.
Yeah.
This one just really doesn't do much for me, man.
I'm going to watch it again right now.
As much as I wanted to.
I do love the Chris Young score in this movie, though. That's probably the best part.
Yeah, I have no issues with the score.
And like the nightmare sequences, it's like Hellraiser, like, because he did the score for Hellraiser.
Yeah, that's valid. Yeah, absolutely. I'll go with that. Just on this watch, the score didn't really, like, shine through. It also didn't take me out of it, and that's a good score to me. A score where the music isn't so abrasive that it takes you out of the scene that you're watching. So it's a solid score, absolutely. Maybe not as, well, I mean, Hellraiser is one of my favorite scores ever. I mean, I have the vinyl. I love that score.
Yeah.
This one, good. Just, you know, maybe not at the levels of a Hellraiser by any stretch. I hated Ben Kingsley's death.
Yeah, I hated it too.
I mean, again, you're talking about an Oscar winner, and that's how you kill him in this movie? You don't even give him a chance. Yeah, and I'm not even talking necessarily about the style of kill. I'm talking about the fact that he kind of fucked up the team, not by his own fault, obviously. He was under mind control, but he never gets a chance to have his redemption moment because of the mind control. And Syl just kind of jumps out of the water, bites him on the face, and then he keels over and dies, and that's it. It reminded me a lot of some of what a lot of horror movie franchises have been doing over the last few years, kind of disrespecting their legacy characters. If you guys remember, you know, Sally Hardesty's character in the Texas Chainsaw 2020 remake from Netflix, I fucking railed against her treatment in that one. Oh, most recently, Exorcist Believer, where they brought back Ellen Burstyn's character just to fucking rip her eyes out. It's like, what is the obsession with horror movie franchise bringing back legacy characters just to kill them off in the most unceremonious ways possible? It's like, if these are legacy characters, they deserve more. I'm not saying don't kill them. No, kill them. Shit, I'm okay with that. But I'm saying show the character some respect. Sally Hardesty went through fucking hell in that original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and then you bring her back 30 years later for the Netflix remake just to kill her off in 5 minutes? Fuck you. Really, fuck you. That's disrespectful. And that kind of lines up with how Ben Kingsley is treated here. I feel like, you know, he's an Oscar winner. He's obviously the biggest star in your movie. A person who shouldn't have even been in your movie. He should have read the script and said no instantly. But he still did it. He deserves more respect than killing him off that quickly. So, yeah, that really bothered me.
Another reason why I like the sequel more.
Oh, well, I mean, maybe I'll watch the sequel. A lot of what you're saying is actually kind of piquing my interest. Or who knows, maybe we'll do it here someday. Hopefully it's more creature feature than this one. This is the least creature feature of any movie we've done. Oh, man, we haven't even brought up Forrest Whitaker's pencil-thin mustache.
Yo, yo, that's for me, that call. And it was. Doc Hawk
and
on.
Oh, man, and Elf. It's like, this movie belongs to Forrest Whitaker's mustache and Alfred Molina's teeth. Holy shit, are Molina's teeth fucked up in this movie. This is very obviously before he could afford a good dentist.
I'm yeah, sorry, remember, remember, he was just like the Mexican guy in Indiana Jones before this.
No, valid. Absolutely. I don't remember his teeth being that bad in that movie. I don't know. I mean, maybe these were fake teeth for the movie. Maybe the character has bad teeth. I don't know. But imagine, yeah, every time
that'd
he
be great
smiled,
if that was
I'm
true.
Like, ew.
I gotta watch the special features now.
Oh, man. I gotta say, I went back and watched the trailer for this movie, too. The trailer does this movie a disservice. Because the trailer doesn't mention or even imply that there's anything sexual about this movie. Like, there's no, like, half-naked shots of Natasha or, like, shots of her taking off her clothes or something.
Oh, I just
I think there's a shot of her.
I just found your answer, Venom. Frank Mancuso okay. Jr. produced this.
Oh, yeah, we've got the Friday the 13th DNA in this one, which it explains the nudity. Absolutely. Like I said, I'm not necessarily railing against the nudity. I'm just saying personal opinion. I don't need it as much. I'd rather watch a good horror movie and then watch a 5-minute clip on Pornhub. That's more than enough for me. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
I don't need it. I don't need an hour and 48-minute movie of Natasha Henstridge running around naked, which, mind you, is impressive. I've already said it. This girl, I mean, absolute 10 out of 10 back in 95. Hell, she still looks good today. I saw her in, what, The Black Door back in 2017, and she still looked good. I think she masturbated on a washing machine in that movie.
I loved it. That movie was awesome. It was like one of my top 10 of the year.
Yeah, I remember the hokey demon at the end that I actually kind of liked because he had like a rock star attitude.
Wasn't the same guy who did like Nightmare Man, right?
Yeah,
I believe.
Yeah, I like that guy's movies.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, I'm friends with him on I'm friends with him on Facebook because of that. It's Rolf Konevsky.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, tell him I love The Black Door. Awesome.
I did too. That's how I'm friends with him.
Nice. And then the only really behind-the-scenes thing I've got on this, I watched some extra, like, you know, extras and special features and things like that, but they were really more about the camaraderie of the actors and the director and his craft. Like, there wasn't really a whole lot of cool behind-the-scenes facts, but the only thing that I was able to grab was that H.R. Giger was actually never on set for this movie. He never once appeared on set. What he did was he designed Syl, And then every single day he would get updated pictures from the production team. And the next morning he would fax in like his changes, like, oh, this shoulder should be smaller. And basically that's how they communicated all throughout the movie, by fax. Geiger never once appeared on the set. And ultimately I thought they did a good job, because even though we, you know, I've kind of railed against the CGI, Syl's basic design is pretty awesome. I'll absolutely, you know, admit that. I fucking love that design. I like the scene in the hot tub when she's killing the guy and her face starts to distort. I think that looks really good. Like, that's some CG that actually looks good in this movie. Mm. The tentacles kind of pulsating underneath young Syl's skin in the train, that all looked really cool. Obviously, once the tentacles came out, there's a little bit of, you know, 95 CGI limitations there, but just them pulsating under her skin, under her face, under her hands, like, that was horrifying. I thought that looked really, really nice. So, yeah, like I said, overall, I'm not a big fan of this movie, but there are a lot of elements to it that I enjoy. The creature design, the score, a couple of the actors, Forest Whitaker, Alfred Molina. You know, there is a lot to like about this movie. It's just if you're like me and, you know, you notice imperfections, they start to pile on. They start to make the movie almost laughable because, you know, by the end of the movie, all elements of suspense are gone. Like, there's no suspense. I'm just watching this CGI monstrosity, you know, going through these human characters, and not even enough of them. Like I said, the death toll in this movie should have been higher. I mean, they make out Syl to be this badass, almost unstoppable creature, but then, you know, a guy with a lazy eye and a flamethrower beats her. You know, it's kind of, you know? I mean, it's great for humanity. It shows that, you know, we can't be taken over quite that easily. You know,
till the rat at the end.
Oh yeah, and God, the stupid rat. Yeah, the sting at the end of this movie is almost as bad as the rest of the movie. Well, basically, we see one of the sewer rats kind of drag off one of Syl's tentacles that got cut off, and we see that the tentacle is still kind of moving, curling up, pulsating. So it's almost like it's still alive. We don't actually see the rat eat the tentacle, but after that, we see the rat attack another rat with the same long tongue that Syl has and that Syl's baby had. I don't know if the baby...
Oh, the mongoloid baby with his little baby hand? That was the fucking weirdest thing ever.
Oh, God, yeah. Him growing was disturbing. And it was kind of funny. I did actually like the shot where he's sitting there watching one of his arms growing, and then the other arm
he's
isn't
like, use
growing.
My good
so
arm.
He starts slamming that hand on a rock. Like, what's going on? Are you going to grow?
Chris Elliott is so sad.
Hey, Chris Elliott references are always welcome.
Oh, yeah.
All right, folks. So, Don, Derek, anything to add before we get out of here?
No. Trying to think, yeah, most of my stuff is covered.
Yeah, most of the stuff that I do like that they do kind of explain more in the sequel, you know, you have to watch the sequel. It kind of makes some of the things that you're saying, Venom, kind of make a little bit more sense, but kind of makes it's hard because when they start to explain shit in these movies, it's...
Yeah, I do remember. It's been a while since I've seen the sequel, and probably almost as long as I've seen this one before now. But yeah, from what I remember, it is very, very heavy on explaining a lot of stuff. You know, a lot of that, you know, technical stuff, because they cloned her, so they're talking about like all the, you know, the various things that they had to take out, all the, you know, alien, all the, you know, all of that stuff that they, you know, tried to clone out to, you know, make her more human.
Well, the sequel might get a visit very soon from me. We'll have to see. But
the director of The Changeling, imagine.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I love The Changeling, so yeah, anything by that director, I'll absolutely
watch. It's a different kind of movie because it's like, it's still very, very horny, but yeah, it's not exactly the, you know, atmospheric slow burn pace that Changeling is.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Well, that's going to do it for us and our review of 1995 Species. Once again, thank you all so much for joining us. And don't forget, next month, join us once again as we look at the new Godzilla movie, Godzilla vs. Kong 2, The New Empire. very excited for that one. I was actually action figure shopping today and picked up a couple of the Scar King action figures that just came out. So that's pretty exciting. So, yeah, we'll see you next month for that. And that's pretty much it, folks. So on behalf of Derek B. and Don and Nelly, I am Mr. Venom. Thank you, saying thank you for joining us for episode 25 of Creature Comforts. And we hope to see you next time. Say goodbye to the folks.
Later.
Later.
Adios.
Check you later. Check you later. Check you later.